planning that's going on at state level and in local governments across the state. For some folks, they're focused on the sales tax, like our friends in Otsego County. I know we've always envied how much they collect in sales and occupancy tax, but that has turned out to make things quite difficult for them now. The state funds about, well, the state is a major funder for Schoharie County's programs. And so what happens to state revenues will affect us in some way. We've been keeping close tabs with the Division of Budget and, of course, with the many reports from the Comptroller's office. And so I'm delighted that Comptroller DiNapoli and the Deputy Comptroller for Local Government and School Accountability are here to help us get a better handle on the fiscal crisis we may face going forward this fiscal year and perhaps even next year. I don't need to introduce Comptroller DiNapoli. He's well known across the state. But one thing you may not know is he's been coming to Schoharie County pretty much every year since the floods. In August of 2011, he brought, I guess, a bunch of the accountants in his office, and they did a lot of good work for us that apparently did not involve accounting. So, and he's been coming back ever since. So thanks again for coming to join us for, I guess you would say, our next disaster. With that, I'll turn it over to the to Tom DiNapoli. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. Thanks, Steve, always for your capable work as county administrator, for the very kind introduction. As Steve well knows, and many of you know, I have a great deal of fondness for Schoharie County and the people there. And very often when I talk about the resilience of New York State, I point to that experience.
Has joined.
That experience of being there after the floods. And Steve was right. You know, our accountants maybe weren't so good on the finishing work, but they were pretty good on the demolition work. And as you recall, we were able to get wonderful support from the Capital Region Building and Construction Trades Council. And those were the folks that really did so many of the finishing touches. So you just have a beautiful community in terms of natural beauty, but certainly the strength and resilience of the people I admire and respect. To Bill Federice and all the supervisors, thank you for your public service, especially during yet another time of great challenge. And Bill, thank you and the team for inviting me to spend some time with you, at least through this call. I will look forward to the day where, you know, I could be there again in person. And, you know, we'd certainly look forward to coming to one of your meetings at some point down the road, if that would make sense for you. As Steve mentioned, we're also joined on the phone by Elliot Auerbach. Elliot is the deputy controller in my office for local government and school district accountability. Elliot joined us after a very distinguished tenure as the elected county controller for Ulster County. So certainly he's familiar with the work of county officials, and he certainly knows Schoharie County as well. So what I'd like to do is give you you know, an update on some of the issues that we see related to the fallout to the pandemic. And I know Bill and Steve forwarded to us some questions that will come up afterwards. Some of the questions I may touch on, but, you know, let me just say on the front end, there still is a fair amount of uncertainty as to where we're going from here. And as you'll see in my comments, a lot of it really depends on whether or not we get additional help from Washington. So I just want to say at the outset that we, like you, are in touch with the Division of Budget, looking at the trends. There is still, though, a lot of uncertainty in terms of not just the data points on revenue, but what will be the impact on the state budget. And obviously the concern is if we do have the kinds of budget cuts that at least have been outlined, that have been outlined as that have been outlined as a possibility, you know, that has the danger of transferring the state's budget problems to you at the local level. So with that, just as an opening, let me get into some comments, and then we'll certainly get to your questions. Again, the obvious, you and the folks who work in your towns and for the county and in your villages as well, really have been on the front lines of dealing with the first challenge that we have. I mean, I'm going to talk a lot about the numbers and the economy and impact on government that you certainly care about in your official capacity. But, you know, we need to keep in mind this is a public health crisis. And, you know, it really is at the local government level where we see the response to that. And we again see everyday heroes, both in terms of those in the public service and certainly those working in healthcare. I know last week was National EMS Week, and certainly our first responders always we appreciate, you know, their great efforts. So, you know, as we talk about getting the economy moving again, and we'd all agree that ultimately we do need the economy moving again. That's how the revenue will be generated again, and people will be able to get back to work and be able to pay their taxes, and that's really what we need. But as we do that, you know, I think it is important to always emphasize we have to do it in a safe way, right? The worst thing would be if we reopen in a way that we end up with a reinfection rate that sets us backward again. So I know there's a lot of frustration with how long it's taken, and I saw the headlines this morning. You know, I'm up here in Albany in the TU about phase two. Looked like it was going to start today, but now, you know, the state is saying it's on hold for a bit. You know, so everybody's very much on edge and very anxious to get back to where we want to be. But we do have a regional phase and approach, as you know, and every region at least is in phase one, except for New York City, that obviously was hit the hardest, and they have their own challenges there. You know, the good news is at least even if phase two is somewhat on hold, we're at least starting again with phase one. So in terms of construction and manufacturing, curbside, retail, and agriculture, we are starting to see some return to what had been some of our previous activity, recognizing that it's not like flicking a switch and going back to where we were on March 1st. But that kind of reopening, and from my perspective, the, you know, the return of the strong economy we had, it's going to take a long time. I mean, I don't profess to be an economist, and you have all this debate about V-shaped recovery, U-shaped recovery, W-shaped recovery. You know, to me, everything that I see tells me it's going to be a slow recovery, you know, without any doubt. I think there'll be a recovery, but we just don't know how long it's going to take. What we do know is that the economic devastation and then by extension, the impact on government revenues has been severe. You know, we saw for the first quarter nationally, 5% drop in gross domestic product. And, you know, for this quarter that we're in now, you know, the numbers are up and down, but, you know, 20%, 30%. It's certainly this second quarter of the calendar year is going to be a very, very negative year as far as the nation's economy and obviously the state's economy as well. We saw the figures for April, 20.5 million jobs lost nationally, 14.7% unemployment. We know here in New York, we've paid out thus far $10 billion in unemployment benefits to over 2 million New Yorkers. Keep in mind, you know, that $10 billion figure compares to the total unemployment benefits paid out in 2019 was a little over $2 billion. So here we are at the end of May. We are, you know, five times ahead of where we were for the whole year last year. I mean, so that just that underscores the economic devastation. Our unemployment rate here in New York at 14.5%, obviously dramatic increase. And for Schoharie in April, you were at 11.9%. So, you know, you compare that to what was happening for the first 3 months of this year to where we're at now. I mean, even in Schoharie, I think you were a little under 6% for the first 3 months, and that includes the 2 weeks of March where we first saw the impact of this, and compared to where we are for April, you know, 11.9%. And I think, you know, the obvious point here is that although when we look at the percentages, they may not be as dramatic as, you know, a lot of comparisons to the Great Recession, right? So, you know, that percentage is not as bad as back then. But what makes this economic disaster so challenging is that it happened so fast. You know, it just happened overnight. It's like a light switch went on, and we went from a relatively strong economy to all these folks losing their jobs and the economy being on hold. You know, you see the various surveys, 53% of New York households have experienced loss of employment income since March 13th. So even folks who may have still have their job, their income is down. That has other ramifications. People, putting off obviously purchases that fuel the economy, travel, medical care, other than related to COVID, medical procedures, all that's been on hold. That has other implications as well. It was mentioned earlier, sales tax, we look at that pretty carefully. It's a very important revenue source for the state, even more important for our counties, as important, if not more important, than the property tax revenue. You know, we put out a quarterly report from our office on sales tax. And for this year, I said to Elliot and the team, how relevant is putting out the first quarter of 2020 sales tax, because the world changed so rapidly after mid-March. But, it was still somewhat interesting. We actually had statewide a 4.6% increase for the first quarter. And it's really when you drill down on the numbers that you see the dramatic impact. So the area of the state that was first hit so hard was the New York City metro area. Just in those last 2 weeks of March, a 12% decrease in sales tax revenue. So, we made the decision instead of doing quarterly reports, it would be helpful for tracking the state revenue and certainly local government revenue as well, for us to do monthly sales tax reporting. So I think you saw we had the April numbers, and sure enough, it showed that sales tax collections were down by 24.4% for the month of April, compared to a year earlier. For Schoharie County, you were down about 18.5%, so a little better than the statewide average, but, Schoharie and every region of our state experienced significant loss in sales tax revenue. And again, for local government, sales tax, very, very key revenue source. So, we're just closing out May. We'll see what the numbers are. But, I think that trend, that pattern is certainly going to continue. So rather than going to all the different data points there, let me get to the state's fiscal position and budget position. So the state budget was put together, I guess, on April 2nd, a little bit late in the middle of all this just first happening. And so we have the updated financial plan from about 2 weeks ago. And it shows that the state is facing a budget gap of about $13.3 billion for the coming year. That has to do with the various revenue sources that obviously are stretched and are stressed. It also has to do with the fact that in response to the pandemic, as you know, the tax filing date has been pushed for federal and state taxes to July 15th. So the very significant revenue that we would normally get this time of year is delayed. And it comes at a time that we have significant payouts for the state, particularly with regard to school aid in May and in June. We just this week, the state did make its state aid payment to our local school districts that was slated. So we have, cash flow challenge right now at this time of the year. We did see some press. It wasn't a formal announcement from Division of Budget, but we did see the budget director was quoted in some recent press articles to say that certain grants and monies that were owed to cities and some of our colleges and universities, that they were being delayed. Not that they were being cut, but that there was a delay in some of those payments arriving. We haven't seen a formal notification or a detail of all of what may be slowed down. And as you know, the salary increase for state workers also, the 2% increase has been delayed as well. So in terms of outright cuts, we haven't seen that yet. Part of what is helping the state at this moment is that we have received $5.1 billion from the federal government as part of the coronavirus relief fund. Some of that money has been allocated. We are awaiting further definition and guidance from the Department of Treasury at the national level, so we understand what we can use that money for. But that's certainly helping us right now with our cash flow challenge. The state budget that was put together, in many ways was a placeholder budget, if I could call it that. So there were numbers in there, but it was very clear that there was an understanding that some of those numbers may not hold up depending on the revenue. And so the governor, through the Division of Budget, was granted extraordinary authority to make adjustments in the budget figures, meaning to cut some of the spending that had been anticipated. The governor was also granted extraordinary authority to borrow beyond our usual limits on borrowing that we have in the state. And there are different trigger points through the budget year. There are three. The first one we just passed was the May 15th, what we call the cash report that the controller's office, that my office puts out. And what that May 15th cash report showed is that for the month of April, our revenues were down over 68% year over year. So that first trigger of a significant revenue loss has kicked in. So the opportunity for the governor through the Division of Budget to make spending cuts, that is very much on the table right now, and also to do additional borrowing. What we have seen so far, and it's not related directly to the pandemic crisis, we have seen a cut in Medicaid reimbursements, obviously of concern, you know, to the hospitals particularly. But this is part of the Medicaid redesign team. So there was a previous 1% across the board cut. Now they added another 0.5% cut. But, you know, the real question that people have is, what about those other budget cuts? The governor has laid out parameters of a cut to state agencies of about $1.6 billion in local assistance, which is money to localities like Schoharie County and to our school districts and our villages and our cities and our towns. A total of $8.2 billion in local assistance cuts. You know, he signaled it could be as much as a 20%, pretty much across the board cut. But thus far, those cuts have not been imposed. Why? The governor has made very clear, and, you know, I think he's correct, and we've tried to echo this call, is that the impact on not just New York, really, it's an impact on all the states. New York is very hard hit, but we're not alone. The economic damage, the economic fallout from the economy being on hold in response to the public health concerns with the coronavirus pandemic has created an economic damage and a revenue shortfall not of our own making. And the federal government, which obviously has many more resources in terms of raising money and printing money than the states do, needs to help the states. We appreciate the help so far. You know, help for small businesses, for hospitals, the coronavirus relief fund, and reimbursing for expenses. But we need more help in the form of direct and unrestricted aid to help the state plug its budget hole so we don't pass our problems on to the local level. And we have also asked for, as part of additional federal relief, more help directly for our localities, including counties like Schoharie, because you're having your own revenue shortfall. Putting aside, even if all the state aid and state programs remain whole based on what you thought they were going to be, you're still having your own shortfalls on sales tax. You may have some folks that won't be able to pay their property taxes, you know, real estate transactions that generate revenue, tourism, hotel occupancy, and so on. So we really have been joining with those saying we need more help for the state. The governor has outlined a request for a little over $60 billion over multiple years in terms of what we need in New York, because, you know, our challenge too is that, you know, there are clearly going to be bigger out-year budget gaps because of this crisis. It's not just a 2020 problem. So, you know, this is very much the focus in Washington. I think the debate has, you know, somewhat moved forward. You don't hear as much talk about, you know, states declaring bankruptcy, and I think that's important to have that off the table. We couldn't do that anyway, nor would we want to do it. You know, the House passed a bill, and this is the negotiations that are going on now. And I think the good news is that in New York, it's very much been a bipartisan call. It's not been a Republican or Democrat issue. You know, the challenge for us, though, is that we need this help sooner than later, because if it looks like there's going to be gridlock on this question for many more weeks, you know, I think the governor is going to have no alternative other than to impose some of those cuts. You know, when you have a shortfall, you either cut spending, you borrow, And you know, the expectation is there may be a combination of both of those. And there is more borrowing going on now to help us with cash flow. And the other alternative that some people are starting to talk about is raising taxes. I personally don't think in the middle of this crisis will be a smart time for us to, you know, start raising taxes. But, you know, others have a different opinion on that one. But that'll be up to the legislature and the governor. So, you know, I think in terms of many of your questions about what will the cuts look like, you know, the short answer is we just don't know at this point, because the governor is waiting to see what may come from Washington. But what we've said is, you know, the sooner that, even if it's just to give it some opportunity to plan, the sooner that they could specify what possible cuts would be, I think that would make it, you know, easier for local officials to at least maybe start to plan. I know you've had concerns in Schoharie, and I saw in the local press you had to make a tough decision on furloughs for a short period of time. So I know you're trying to do the responsible thing, you know, in terms of anticipating what could be coming. But all of this is very much on hold until we see what comes from Washington. A couple of other quick points, and we'll get to your questions. Many folks asked me about the impact on the pension fund. You know, I think, as you know, in New York, we benefit from having a well-funded state pension plan. In the numbers for 2019, we're 96% funded, one of the best funded pension plans in the country. But we've certainly taken a hit with the volatility in the stock market. Again, not that all of our money is in the stock market, because it's not. One of the challenges for us is that we value the fund on March 31st, the end of the fiscal year. So with everything going on, as you could appreciate, March 31st was not the greatest date to value our fund. So we're doing the final calculations, because that's the number that goes into the, you know, the employer contribution rate that we calculate and send the bills out to you. So, you know, we're waiting for the audited numbers. But, you know, there's no doubt that we are going to have a negative year. And it's frustrating, because at the beginning of March, we were at a double-digit return, really headed for a good year. And just those last 2 weeks really set us back. Again, in terms of context, 10 years ago with the Great Recession, we lost 26% value of the fund just in 1 year. I mean, incredible drop. And those of you who are around then, you recall very significant impact on the contribution rate that we charged to the counties and to our government employers. The good news is it's not going to be anywhere near that kind of loss. You know, again, I don't want to venture a number, because it would be speculative, but it's going to be a single-digit negative number. Again, we went into this in a strong position, so we'll weather it. But there will be, there will be, I expect, in the bill that will be due in February 2022, there will be an increase in the contribution rate. What it will be, you know, we still got a ways to calculate that, and the investment return is only a part of what goes into calculating that bill. There are other factors, mortality rate, you know, payrolls, were there salary increases in recent years, and so on. We'll keep you informed about that. Keep in mind that we still have on the books the stabilization program. I don't recall if Schoharie took advantage of it 10 years ago, but it does provide the opportunity for government employers that have an issue in paying a higher bill to amortize or pay out over a longer period of time a portion of any increase. You know, again, that's for down the road, but I just mentioned that to you. I also want to mention, as part of the pension fund, the legislature, as you know, had their session this week, and part of what they worked on was an enhanced benefit, a presumption of an accidental death benefit for a health worker who got the disease from COVID-19 and unfortunately passed away. This will provide greater security for the surviving family of any public worker who, in the course of their duties, contracted COVID-19 and passed away. I don't know if you had any cases like that in your community, but keep in mind that that just passed, and you know, we're confident the governor is going to sign it into law. You know, we've been working in our office, very few people in the office. The only office open is the Albany office, and I've been here. Most of our folks are working remotely, but we are getting the job done in terms of payments and pensions and contracts and, you know, any way that we can provide support on local government. Elliot Auerbach and his team have put an updated part on our website related to local government dealing with the COVID-19 crisis, and I certainly encourage all of you to take a look at that. I know the annual financial report and some other reports our office sometimes are due. We, believe me, we're not going to slap anybody's hand if there's any delay in that. Just keep us posted on, you know, on what your status may be on any reports that you need to get to us. We have been working, Elliot and his team and our legal folks, with the Association of Towns and Association of Counties, NICOM, school boards. And we did put together a controller's program bill that I'm pleased to report to you has passed the legislature. Again, I don't see any issue with the governor signing it, that will provide some flexibility to our local governments and school districts. We looked at some of what was done in response to Superstorm Sandy in the last go around. And this program bill would extend repayment terms for bond anticipation notes, would also expand flexibility to utilize and redirect reserve funds, and allow additional time to repay interfund advances. So, you know, we looked at what had been done in the past. We talked to the different associations, and we came up with this. And hopefully this may help you in Schoharie County in terms of dealing with this issue. Many of you may have heard that we've also, for small businesses that have been hit very hard, we have a long-term investment relationship with the New York Business Development Corporation, which is now called Pursuit Lending. They changed their name. But taking advantage of some of the federal guarantees, we have another $50 million available in small business loans for New York-based businesses and 501c3 nonprofits. So if you'd like more information about that, Steve can be in touch with our office, and we could explain to your folks how to find out more about that money. We've also been reminding everyone of our unclaimed funds program, returning people's lost money. I know in Schoharie County, we've got accounts over valued at over $2 million, and we've reminded everybody our unclaimed fund unit is up and working. And you know, you might want to, as part of your communication with your constituents, remind everybody that there's lost money there that we want to reunite people with. And during tough times, especially, people would like to be reconnected with money that they may have been separated from. So, you know, let me end it there, and I think I'll turn it back to, to Bill and Steve for handling the questions. I also want to say, you know, your great Senator Jim Seward and your Assemblyman Chris Tague, they've been working very hard as well. Jim, as you know, has had his own challenges related to COVID and health, but, you know, thank God he got through that. So, you know, we've all really been trying to work together, you know, in a bipartisan spirit. And as I said at the outset, you know, whenever I talk about the resilience of New Yorkers, I talk about what I saw firsthand in Schoharie County a few years ago. And again, I just really want to commend all of you for your public service as supervisors and just being part of a wonderful community that, you know, I really value. And anything we could do to help you get through this, we're here to do that. So let me end it there. And thank you for being patient listeners. And as I said, I'll turn it back to Bill and Steve to handle how you want to do the questions.
Well, thank you very much, Comptroller DiNapoli. We really appreciate what you've shared with us. And yes, we do appreciate the opportunity to ask questions. Since there's 16 of us, I think what we'll do is I'll just go down the list of supervisors. I don't know if everybody will have a question, but you just let us know how your time is, and we'll work with that. So last time we did this, we started at the top of the list, so I'm going to start at the bottom of the list with the W's. I don't know if Steve Weinhofer is on. Have any questions, Steve? Nope. Harold Holman.
I don't have any questions this time.
Thank you. Earl Van Wormer.
I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay. I know Alicia Terry submitted some questions.
Yes, she did. So I have a couple of questions. First of all, I really view county governments, if you will, as kind of in the squeeze. We talk about a squeeze generation where, for example, baby boomers are taking care of parents, they're taking care of children and perhaps grandchildren. I see county governments as being kind of that squeeze unit of government. You know, we're making school districts whole with property tax. We make towns and villages whole with property tax. And this uncertainty is putting us under a tremendous amount of stress. Is there any way that there's going to be either some reconsideration. While I support the property tax cap, if we don't get relief from some of our mandated programs, you know, we're going to blow right through that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's been any conversations about either further mandate relief or, you know, taking a look at the property tax cap, given what's going on with COVID and the need for looking at that revenue source for county governments.
Yeah. No, Supervisor, I think you laid out the issue very well, you know, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, in terms of the property tax cap, even prior to this current situation, you know, some of our colleagues in local government have been making suggestions on a bit more flexibility, perhaps excluding certain items from the tax cap calculation. I think it'd be fair to say at this point that there's been nothing new of any, you know, significance proposed. I mean, the tax cap is statutory, so that's one issue. Whether the governor could or couldn't do any change, you know, based on emergency powers is probably open to legal interpretation. But I think, you know, I think you're right about the problem. I guess I would say it gets back to, you know, the earlier question and really the big question. Will the state have to invoke those spending cuts that will create that real stress and that real squeeze that you identify, or will we be able to get more help from Washington and or the economy start to pick up and revenues flow again so that we could avoid that? And I think that, you know, that's probably the bigger question in terms of the uncertainty. And I agree with you, the sooner you would know what will happen there, the better. I guess I would say, you know, you could have had an answer on that already, and the answer probably would have been a significant cut. So maybe it's a good thing, at least right now, that is on hold until we give, you know, the federal government a little more chance to respond to the request. So, you know, I would just say in terms of the tax cap, if you have any specific suggestions on what kind of flexibility or exclusions you'd like to see, you know, just follow up with Senator Seward and you know, with Chris and let them know. And you know, I just don't know what the prospects are for there to be a legislative change given, you know, the limitations of the legislative calendar right now. And look, you follow what's going on. The governor has been very reluctant to entertain any amendments to the property tax cap. So I don't see. This is an opinion, speculation, not official state policy. I don't think you're going to see anytime soon any change in the property tax cap from what I'm hearing.
Okay. And I respect that. And generally speaking, support the property tax cap. But then we've got to have some kind of relief for mandated programs that are being carried out at the county level in particular, especially if, you know, the reimbursements or funding for those programs is going to be cut.
Fair point.
We're going to be, again, that's what I call that squeeze unit of government. We're right there in the middle. So we did already pass the April 1 to April 30 look period for the state budget office to review things. And if I understand correctly, you know, they're putting off decisions and trying to give the feds a chance to respond or come up with a program. Are we going to, you know, I'm hoping, because certainly by August 1st or even mid-July, we've got to start putting our budgets together for the coming fiscal year, which in Schoharie County for towns and villages, that's all pretty much on the calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need answers. Do you feel confident that we're going to have them in time, even by August 1st?
You know, again, you know, it's not our shop, so I don't want to speak for the governor's division of budget. But with my sense of what the time frame is, I think you will by August 1st. And I hope it'll be a welcome answer and not the worst case scenario. But, you know, while the governor is, you know, as I said, that first trigger was was May 15th. I don't see the state being able to wait until, you know, the end of July before they make a decision on what to do. So yeah, I think you will know. I hope it'll be good news and not bad news.
Okay, but, you know, and again, I appreciate and fully understand your role in state government, and I'm a big fan of the resources that your office provides municipalities and school districts. So, you know, I do understand that some of my questions probably should be better directed to the state budget office, but I'm delighted you were meeting with us, so I figured I'd ask.
Absolutely. No, we're happy to answer in any way that we can. Thank you for your good questions and your nice comments. I appreciate that.
Yes. So my next question is, do you think by the 1st of June, we're going to have an idea of the projected impact is to the CHIPS or other highway funding programs will be? You know, we're in construction season. We're in upstate New York. You know, these projects, you know, a lot of us are trying to figure out, you know, is a paving or resurfacing a road going to be a go or a no-go, you know, based on the impact to those highway funding programs. And again, I just don't know if you have a sense of, because by August 1st, then it's almost too late.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely fair question in terms of the timing. Yeah, it's CHIPS, it's the Bridge New York, it's Pave New York, different programs. You know, again, I don't want to repeat what I said before. I can't give you a date certain only because that's beyond what we do, and they haven't communicated any date to us. I do think it's interesting, as you know, the governor met with the president this week, and the big topic, besides the, you know, the usual ask as far as the federal help, was the notion of helping to restart the economy by having a significant infrastructure investment to come from Washington that would come to the states and the localities. So I think in terms of the governor's priorities, he sees these kinds of programs as being very important, short run, not just to help our local governments with what your needs are, but also in terms of getting the economy moving again, and long term, obviously you need a transportation and environmental infrastructure in good shape so that you can support a robust economy. So, you know, again, I don't want to speak for them, but I think in terms of priorities, I think these kinds of programs would be the kinds of programs that would they be interested in trying to keep whole as best as possible. But again, if there's no additional support from Washington, if the revenue numbers continue to show a big drop off, you're likely going to see some level of across-the-board cuts coming from the state. And look, you're right. The sooner we know what the ground rules are and what the numbers are, the better it will be for you to prepare. But we, you know, they just have not signaled a date by when we would know about CHIPS or these other programs.
Okay. All right. And then I do appreciate your discussion about the strategies that the state is looking at regarding its deficit budget. I'm glad we're not going to declare bankruptcy, or at least that's not at the front of the table.
Yeah.
Because again, we've got a long-term fiscal health for the state, for the counties, towns and villages that we need to consider. So I do appreciate your discussion earlier of the different strategies the state was going to explore to manage the budget issues. Thank you. And that's all my questions.
Thank you. They're good questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia, for those questions. Alan, do you have anything?
No, I have nothing at this time. Thank you.
Okay. And Phil Schofield?
I think Alicia kind of covered about everything.
Yeah.
And I thank her for that. So I have none other right now.
Okay. Erwin Rosen. All right. Leo McAllister, Cobleskill.
No, Alicia asked the questions. And thank you, Mrs. Napoli, for being here and being pretty upfront with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Sandra Manco.
Yeah, I think Alicia covered most of my questions, and she also expressed how much we appreciate what you're doing to support Schoharie County. The only additional question I have is if we have CHIPS rollover money, is that secure, or is there a possibility that may be cut also?
Well, anything in the pipeline is obviously in better shape than something that's new. You know, I think it'd be fair to say as part of cash flow management, there could be a delay. But, you know, I would just say, you know, offline, follow up with our office and we could check on the status of something like that. But I think that will be much less in jeopardy than future funding.
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, Sandy. Alex Luneski from Town of Wright.
I heard a question or a statement regarding the federal government printing additional funds and receiving additional funds. And maybe this is way above everybody's head at this point, but getting additional revenues from the federal government, at some point, everybody's going to have to pay that back as well. What's the thought on that? I mean, we keep going to the federal government and we keep going deeper in debt as a entire country. It's still taxpayer dollars.
I mean, look, you're absolutely right. And as you know, we had a growing federal deficit to begin with, having nothing to do with the pandemic. I think it'd be fair to say in recent years, the discussion of federal balanced budget kind of went out the window on a bipartisan basis. So, you know, compare that to the debate, you know, maybe 10, 20 years ago, you know, we're in a very different time. And again, I think the challenge is that, you know, the federal government, just the reality is they still have revenue sources and ability in terms of money supply that is way beyond what locals have and what states have. So, you know, by default, it is the federal government that is the only place of last resort. You know, look, I think you're absolutely right. Does it, you know, it means at some point, you know, you have to pay up. There's no doubt about it. But when we're in this kind of a crisis, you know, we talked about bankruptcy for the state, and you know, the state as a sovereign can't go bankrupt. I mean, it's not possible under federal law, and nor would it be advisable. But that being said, localities can go bankrupt, and we've seen in other parts of the country, you know, Detroit being, you know, the most recent big example. But there was a county, Jefferson County down in, I think it was Alabama. You saw a couple of the cities, Stockton and some of the other cities in California over years. You know, so, you know, again, if the feds don't help the states pass the challenge down to the local level. You know, Alicia mentioned the squeeze at the local level. What would be worse, having a federal government that has a significant deficit, or, you know, localities getting squeezed to the point that they may have to consider something like bankruptcy? And from my perspective, you know, the federal government in the long run, you know, will be able to manage that and navigate that better than, you know, than any locality or even than a state. So I think you raise an important question, and it is a philosophical one. And obviously, if any of us were running for federal office, we'd probably be expected to have a, you know, a more clear answer on it. But I think for now, from where I'm sitting as a state official, from where you're sitting as local officials, you know, you can't create the money in Schoharie. We can't create it all in New York, and we already have a high debt burden. We can't just borrow our way out of it, and cuts in the state budget ultimately impact on the locals. We really have no choice other than to look to Washington for more help. May not be the perfect answer, but I think it's the best answer that we've got.
I appreciate your honesty on that one. That's all the questions I have at this point.
Thank you, Alex. John Levitt.
No questions.
Hey, Wes Laraway.
Thank you for the information. No questions.
Okay. Jake Lake, I know you had one.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Actually, I had one, but I actually have a couple separate from that, though. Going back to the highway funding, so we also, as Sandra had stated, we have some turnover built up funds for the highway. So we are doing some projects. One project in particular is finishing. Another one has started, but we've decided yesterday, because we're so unsure about that CHIPS funding, that we're going to cut back on that somewhat, actually quite a bit, until we know for sure. So not only a delay in the CHIPS funding, but also will there be an actual decrease? That, I think that's an important thing to know.
Again, I hate to repeat an uncertain answer, but you know we're all waiting to get more direction on that kind of a specific item from Division of Budget. It has not been forthcoming at this point, so we got to wait a bit longer. And again, they're waiting to see what the overall response will be from the federal government before they make those kinds of decisions and announce them. So hopefully sooner than later, but we just don't know at this point.
Okay. So thank you. So in other words, we're going to be on the side of caution on that then and look at that from that standpoint, I believe.
Probably makes sense.
Okay. So the second thing is, as far as the reopening phases of the 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and the dates given, and this is just a statement that much anticipated by especially businesses, small businesses. I ran one for 31 years, and I understand what's happening out there, although retired now. And so when those dates are given, just that the experts please look at it sooner than that day given, because that date is set in stone by a lot of people, and even a slight delay for them means a lot to the negative. So that's my statement on that.
I think everybody would agree with that, and that's why when I saw the papers this morning, the concern about phase two being put off, because there the governor has empaneled this group of international experts on the healthcare side. Again, we want to make sure the reopening is done safely, but I think folks were pleased about phase one, and certainly we're anticipating phase two. So let's hope that if it's not today, it'll be some point next week. I don't know about any of you, but you better let me know when there's a barbershop open in Schoharie County, because I'm driving out there from Albany. That's the first thing I am desperately in need of. So, I think everybody's very much anxious, and, certainly for our small businesses. One of the things, and not to go off topic, but, from the perspective of the pension fund, I'm glad the stock market seems to be doing much better. But I don't really understand how the stocks and these big name companies and corporations are doing well in the face of the kind of devastation, we see. That disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street, maybe some of these big companies are surviving, and I know not all of them are, but you look at, and certainly for a community like Schoharie, what's been happening to our small businesses is just heartbreaking, and it's going to be hard for many of them to come back, especially if there are restrictions on capacity. I mean, just think of a restaurant alone right there. If they're told they can only have 50% seating, go down the list of other small businesses. And some of them may not be able to come back at all. So, this is serious about getting the economy open again. I think we all understand it has to be done safely. Any of us that know people or, God forbid, in our families that got this disease, how severe it can be. So we want to be careful, but we also have to recognize the consequences of people not being able to work, people not being able to open their businesses again. It's a real issue, and I think you're right. We need certainty, and we want to do it smartly and safely, but we have to keep the reopening process moving forward.
And thank you. I also echo the sentiments of thank you for taking this call today and answering a lot of these questions and for your expertise. Thank you a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dick. I think we're almost near the end, Controller. Is Peggy 8 on? I didn't know if she was. Okay. And Don Airy, who did submit some questions, I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you, Controller DiNapoli and Mr. Auerbach. I did have several questions. Some have already been answered, so thanks for that. I want to go back to a comment I think I heard. Did I hear correctly in that the federal government has provided $5.1 billion in additional aid to the state recently?
Yes, that was part of the Coronavirus Relief Fund, one of the first go-arounds, yep.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Nam,
yeah.
when did that happen?
About 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
Maybe even 3 weeks. Yeah.
Thanks very much. So with that being said, I guess my next question is, and I'm going to ask you to speculate a little bit, I guess, but
sure.
You know, County Board of Supervisor members, we've been provided estimates that state aid and revenues to the county, school, and local government could be reduced as much as 50%. I mean, I kind of call that the fiscal apocalypse. Those estimates of 50%, up to 50% in revenue cuts have caused reactions that include staff reductions here in the county, freezes on procurement, hiring freezes, et cetera. And while the need for appropriate preparations for any revenue shortfall, you know, certainly worthwhile, I have concerns regarding overreaction and the related additional anxiety during this difficult time. I mean, your opinion, and you've had to do that a lot, and I apologize, but what is the real likelihood as of today that we would experience something as drastic as a 50% reduction in state aid and revenues?
So two points. First, on the $5.1 billion, I just want to clarify that is anticipated to be reimbursement to the state for COVID-19 response expenses. So it's meant to be like a reimbursement. At this point in the state's fiscal plan, only about $133 million has been drawn down from that money. And I think, as I alluded to earlier, we're waiting for more guidance from Treasury at the national level to see what we could apply that money for. And in the most recent communication, there seems to be a fair amount of flexibility as to what could be deemed a reimbursable expense. So we're hoping that that money will be able to draw even more of it sooner than later, and that will help in terms of the state's cash flow and maybe even in terms of buffeting any immediate issue about cuts to localities. You know, the number that I mentioned, the global number in terms of local assistance cut is about $8.2 billion, but that number has never been broken down in terms of, you know, how much for municipalities, how much for school districts, and then which specific programs. Again, it's the call of the division of the budget and the governor, but the percentage that I've heard more frequently mentioned out loud is 20% reduction. I really haven't heard the 50% figure. So I would agree with you, a 50% reduction, you're concerned about county and municipal programs. Just think about your school districts. That's a big part of your property taxes. If they had a 50% reduction, you know, what that would mean. I've not heard the 50% number. I think that would really be a truly worst case scenario. So, but 20%, I've certainly heard that. So, you know, again, you need definitive answers. You need to know what the numbers are. You can't plan, you can't implement if you don't know the numbers. And as I said, the good news is there's still hope we'll get more from Washington. The bad news is if it means a delay in giving you hard information, it just makes your jobs even easier.
Sure, and thank you for that. I have one more question and then a short comment. I wanted to confirm something else, Mr. Napoli. Has the state received, as of today, I mean, has the state, has federal aid to the state been cut at any at a significant level? I mean, or are we whole as of today?
No, I mean, if anything, you know, there's been more money coming to the state as far as Medicaid reimbursement. I mentioned the coronavirus relief fund, which actually came in on March 27th, I'm told, was the actual date. So, no, there's not been a cut in federal aid in programs at this point, no.
Thank you for that. Then a follow-on comment, and this is probably above your pay grade, and I don't want to go off topic, but out here in rural upstate New York, as you're probably aware, there's a big push for renewable energy projects. And that particular push has a great deal of potential for generating hundreds of millions of dollars in local tax revenues through pilot agreements. And I would urge that your office keep an eye on that situation, because there's a lot of pressure from agencies like NYSERDA to foster very, very, let's put it this way, developer-friendly pilot agreements that I believe do not really serve in the best interests of the upstate taxpayers. I want the revenue. I think Upstate wants the revenue. We're not against renewables. We want it to be done in a professional and manner. But there's a lot of revenue there that could offset some of these decreases if we can get the support of the governor's office in terms of a realistic and fair disbursement of tax revenues from those developers. And thank you again for taking the time.
No, I think it's a fair point. And, you know, keep in mind, as you know, the state has a pretty aggressive goal in terms of moving to more renewables. So I think your point is very timely, and, you know, we'll keep an eye on it.
Thank you.
Okay, we've gone through the list of supervisors. I know that the controller DiNapoli's time and Mr. Auerbach, deputy controller's time, is valuable. So I'll ask one last time, does anybody have any questions? Or
Mel, I'd like to ask one. If I understand the controller correctly, there is a chance we won't have any funding cuts to the towns and perhaps the county. Is that correct?
Well, I mean that's an absolute worst case scenario. So I don't want to leave the impression that the funding you've been expecting is all on the chopping block. I think being realistic, if we don't get more help in this significant number from Washington, and if the economy reopens even more slowly than some anticipate, then in fact you could see some significant reductions in local assistance and programs that you've depended on. But I don't think it'll be as extreme as no funding at all. I don't have that impression. And I don't want to leave you with that impression.
I don't think I said it correctly. What I meant was there's a potential that we might not lose any funding.
Oh. The only funding at this point, you know, as part of the state budget, I think as some of you know, there was a provision that said a portion of sales tax revenue for counties had to be redirected to financially distressed hospitals and nursing homes statewide. And for Schoharie, we calculated that that's going to be a diversion of about $94,000 come January. So outside of that, that's the only direct impact, you know, thus far. And I think the goal would be, if we can, you know, not to have any cut in local assistance. But, you know, I don't want to leave you with the impression that, you know, I'm predicting that there won't be any cut at all. I just hope that if there is going to be some kind of a cut, it will be minimal and it'll be manageable. But hey, best case scenario, what you're expecting is what you're going to get. But, you know, I don't think we're at that point to be able to predict that that's going to be the outcome.
Well, I thank you muchly for that. And the other question that been bugging me since they come out with that, the federal government, that extra $600 for people on unemployment, like Alex brought up before, somebody's got to pay it. And if our funding had come through like we think, or with a little percentage, then maybe we overreacted, like Don said, with our layoffs. Because you're enticing people to add, so some of them are making more than they made working. It doesn't make any sense to me, and that's all I have. I was just looking for an opinion on what you thought on that extra $600.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Many people have raised that. You know, we certainly heard those same stories that people are making more money by not working than working. Yeah. You know, look, I, in fairness to you know, to the folks in Washington, they were responding to a crisis and an immediate need. And I think it would be fair to say that when you make decisions in a crisis mode, some of those decisions are probably not the smartest ones. And that might be an example of, you know, they might not have thought that through as well as they could have. It does seem to be a contradictory outcome to pay people not to work. But that's above my pay grade, so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much, Comptroller.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Comptroller DiNapoli and Deputy Comptroller Auerbach, I think speak for the whole board. You've already heard it a few times that we really appreciate you coming in and being very insightful and giving your perspective as to where we are, where as best we can. and where we might be or not might be. So, it's a tough job, and it's a lot of forecasting here.
Yeah.
And sure, it's a moving target, so in fairness to you, I think you've done a heck of a job in bringing us up to speed.
Thank you for what you and the team there are doing, and consider us a resource. Reach out to Elliot, reach out to me, and any help we can provide, that's what we're here for.
We'll take you up on that.
Good.
Thanks.
Good.
Take care.
All right. Be well. Be safe. Thank you all. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Elliot Auerbach, Deputy Controller.
Has left.
Okay. I thought that was pretty good. I think we learned a lot. We do have any other business on the agenda, and we'll throw that open to anybody who has anything. But I do know Harold has some things that he wants to bring up, so why don't we start with Harold?
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman. The first thing, Barb, correct me if I'm wrong, and Steve, I have a motion here that, remember, we brought back two employees in the elections, and it was in the middle of the week, and what it did was it they didn't get paid for the Monday and Tuesday of that week, and I just want my motion would be to make them whole that, because it wasn't something of their doing.
I'll second that, Thickley.
Any discussion? Since I don't think this will be controversial, I'll just ask for a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Harry.
All right. My next thing I want to bring up is I'll refer to Motion 87 we made. It has to do with the DMV, the clerk side, the Personnel Committee, Finance Committee recommends that we bring back one employee on the clerk side, effective in the next payroll period.
I'll second that also, Dick Lee.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That was Indy in the back. That was Indy in the background, by the way.
Hi, Indy. I hope you're doing well. Okay. Anything else, Harold?
At this time, I don't have any more recommendations due to the fact that I heard last night that phase two was on hold, and we're not sure when DMV is going to open, but it. Going by Motion 87, we're monitoring that very closely. I'm working with Indy, so is Steve. And if DMV is going to open, we'll bring back the people as to the plan that was in place. Indy knows what that plan is. And if it's needed, we'll bring them back. And I'll defer to Steve. You can expand on that if you want to.
Sure. So Fonda and I have been working closely with Indy. And like I say, it's very uncertain when DMVs are going to reopen and exactly how they're going to reopen. We think... like many departments, we think we might be reopening county government around June 8th, but to keep with social distancing measures, it will be, at least in the first 2 weeks, only by appointment. And so we'll be... Fonda and I will be working with departments, and especially DMV, and also the COVID-19 task force, to make sure we open in a in a responsible way. So that's kind of the status of DMV in particular, and in general, all of our departments.
I was on calls until about 10 o'clock last night regarding phase two, and maybe if the board wants, I'll share with them after everybody's done what transpired and where we are and the surprises that we had.
Yes, yes.
I'm sorry, is that? Okay. Thank you. Does anybody have anything they want to bring up?
Yeah, Bill, John Levitt.
Hi, John.
Hi. I just wanted to make sure my county clerk called me this morning to make sure that the June 1st was still going to be the closeout as far as town taxes went in regard to the towns with the county. If we've heard anything different, any change on that?
I haven't heard anything. Mary Ann was going to be on the call, but she had a doctor appointment this morning, so I can't ask her.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate that. That's all I've got.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. In that case, if those who want to hear it, I'll tell you the latest on phase two. As you know, I'm on the control room for the Mohawk Valley representing Schoharie. And right up until midday yesterday, we were assured our numbers looked like we were going to meet the metrics that were required to move along through the phases. But we sort of figured something was up when the meeting was rescheduled to 7 p.m. And at that meeting, we were told that phase two is not ready to go yet. And we were told, and you probably saw, some of you saw the morning news, probably saw, know some or all of this, that it was not ready to go yet because the numbers are being looked at by expert epidemiologists. And I'm sure they are experts, but it was very disappointing that those numbers weren't being looked at during the 2 weeks since the last phase started. So at least we can be told, people who need to get out and back to work would be aware that we're going to hit a roadblock. Let me stress, there is no indication that we have any problems. There is no indication that phase two will be, I could be wrong, but this is what they shared with us, phase two would be pushed out very far. But the governor wants to ensure that these, and that's their words, experts, these experts are up to speed and feel that the metrics have been met. I mean, we've been turning in the numbers every day. They look good. I mean, there's one blip where the hospitalizations are starting to go up a bit, but still under the requirement. So I don't know. And I know there were a great deal of us, particularly one of the county leaders, was very vocal about it because he put his county position of having to tell people that were planning to open today because they were under the mistaken impression that today was the day. And again, I'm not talking out of school because this, he did a press conference and it was on the news this morning that he's not going to enforce it. He says the county, and that's unfortunate, but I can't speak for other counties. There's another meeting at 12 noon that I received a text on while we were doing this call, and they said it's urgent and you need to be on it. I only can speculate what that's all about. As far as phase two, when it does happen, and this is a very high-level summary, the details weren't released, and I haven't even read them yet. It's in the wee hours of the morning, as it was described to me. Some of the highlights of it are that the, as an example, everybody's interested in barbers. My hair's getting a little shaggy, too. The barber must, and the customer must wear a mask, and it's only for hair. There's no manicures or pedicures or anything like that. And the provider, meaning the barber, or whatever their title is, hairdresser, needs to be tested every 14 days. That's a requirement, and you need to certify that you're going to do that before you can open up business. And I think I said they both have to wear masks. That's one of them. There will be significant guidance for office workers, professionals, that will talk about social distancing, sort of what Steve had talked about in terms of DMV. As a matter of fact, let's go back to DMV now. It will not be a pre-pandemic startup if they do keep the June 8th date. There will be a startup, but there'll be significant guidance that we would have to follow, which would probably preclude, or it's probably not physically possible to have that many people and that many employees in the same space. So, and Indy's done a really nice job in putting together a plan on what we know at this point. A really nice job. But of course, once we get the guidance, whenever that is, that's not part of any phase two. That's part of the governor's executive order, which expires June 6th. There's a good likelihood she may need to tweak it a little bit to be in compliance. I guess that's it. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns here. There's a lot of disappointed people. And we'll just keep you posted. I guess that's it. I don't have anything else. Is anybody else?
Bill, this is Earl. I'd like to make a comment.
Sure.
I want to thank you guys who are on this task force helping this region. But, you know, and I'm not one to go out criticizing everybody, but at the same time, the governor's got to get his head out of his butt. Because when you come up with a plan and you have no reason to deviate from that plan, what he wants to have is epidemiologists take a look at that. He should have thought of that 2 weeks ago. He should have been thinking that at the last 11 and a half hours. Do you know how hard it is for these hairdressers? They've got to have, not only do they have to have masks, they have to have face shields, they have to have plastic aprons, they have to have a thermometer to take people, and it can't be one that you can touch somebody with. They have to go out and try to find that stuff. And I know from the one that I have, it's almost impossible to find this stuff. Governor didn't give them any help in where to locate this stuff. They had to go out and try to find some of this stuff, and it was extremely difficult for them to find it. Nobody thought of that when they come up with a plan of what these people had to do. And then to wait to the 12th hour and tell them, well, we got to put phase two on hold because we have this epidemiologist take a look at it. Well, I'm sorry. There's no excuse for that. If he ran a business the way he's running this stuff, he'd be out of business now. And I'm very disappointed in the governor. I thank you guys for what you're doing. I can understand why that legislator, and I understand why some of these people are saying, to heck with you, and they're going out there and trying to do this stuff on their own. Now, I'm not saying it's right, and I'm not condoning it. But, you know, there comes a point of time when you come up with a plan, you try to stick with the plan. And to do this at the last hour, I mean, these people are spending money to try to get a business going that they haven't made for months now. And I'm just sorry. I just had to comment on it, Bill. Again, thank you for what you're doing. But this is absolutely ridiculous. And Governor Cuomo should hang his head in shame. All I had to say.
Thank you very much, Earl. And your points are very well taken. And a lot of that was almost identically mirrored at the control room meeting last night. And what I brought up was, you know, the damage is done, but you need to move as fast as you can on phase two to make sure if it's good, let's get going. But let's not, like phase one and phase two, come out 24, 36 hours before the phase starts with guidance. People need much more time to get prepared.
Well, and Bill, one last comment I'd like to say is, the hindsight is always better than foresight, but I hope learning the lesson that if we've got a pandemic like this and we have to come up with plans on how businesses reopen, I hope people will involve the business people in coming in long-term plans on if something like this or something similar comes up in the future, that we have a plan in effect to say, oh, you know what? We've got this big flu, or we've got another pandemic, or the coronavirus goes back. These are steps maybe we could take so we don't have to close everything down, that maybe we can just slow things up, and we bring the masks, and we bring the face shields, and we bring, you know, as part of the regular routine, so we don't go back here again. So I hope somebody will come up with long-term plans for these various businesses to say, okay, here's a plan. All you got to do is begin to implement this plan. So day one, you know, coronavirus is back in New York State. Let's try this and see if we can't slow it before it gets going again.
Agreed.
Well, anyway, Bill, I didn't mean to get off, but I know how hard these people are, how frustrated people are. And, I mean, there are people walking around on a regular basis. I was down to a gas station the other day, and he told me 80% of the people come in do not wear masks anymore. They're tired of it, and they're not going to do it. And I said, I wear the mask because I think it's the right thing to do. But we got to move this thing along as best we can. And people are just getting frustrated. So, well, thanks again, but up and you know, you go on with the rest of it.
Thank you, Wirl, and thank you as a leader in wearing the mask and setting the example. I do appreciate it, and I'm sure the task force does too.
Just a comment, Bill. This is Harold.
Hi, Harold.
It's going to be short and sweet. I agree with Earl. They need to stop playing games. I mean, you had a lot of these businesses were ready to open, and it happened last night. I mean, they're all set. I mean, how much of a downer do you think that is? I know you know what I'm talking about, Bill, and I appreciate everything you've done. You know, and I'm all for safety, but understand when we open businesses again, there will be some problems. There will be a spike up maybe, but you know that's going to happen in everyday life. We have to follow through. I wear my mask all the time when I go out. Mm-hmm. It's you know, you can't do this to people. I mean, you didn't. I'm not. I don't mean you. I mean the governor's got to get his act together. Thank you.
All right. Well, you know, since you brought that up, I just want to say one other thing about the task force. I mean, we've worked with a lot of different parts of Schoharie County, particularly these superintendents or people who have a particular question on their business, like the golf course, things like that. And the task force, you know, sometimes they get disappointed when we tell them, well, you can't do it that way, or maybe you want to try this way. And they get disappointed because they're under the impression that the task force can give them a waiver or tell them what they want to do, which is contrary to the guidance or the mandates of the state. So that's not our job. Our job is to try and help people to find a way that they can make it work while they're under any restrictions. But I thought that was worthwhile saying, because that's a conception that's out there that, you know, you have to sell it to the task force. No, the task force is going to interpret what you want to do and will tell you if it works or how you can make it work. And I think the task force has done a heck of a job in that regard.
Bill, this is Alan. Can I make a comment?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I share Earl and Harold's frustration completely, and I don't think I'm saying anything an awful lot of us don't think, is that you can't plan everybody's life and everybody's business, especially when you're sitting in Albany and have never had a public sector, a private sector job in your life. And I think they ought to spend more time focusing on guidelines and principles that people can understand, rather than these endless plans and endless how many times a day somebody hairdresser in Syracuse is supposed to take the temperature every day. This is too much planning. We're never going to get through it. And I don't think every other state has really gone that way. And I'm sympathetic to what happened in New York City and downstate and in some of the more densely populated parts of the state, but they're killing us. They're going to kill. What's still alive of the economy in upstate New York before this happened, and there wasn't that much, is just being killed by this. So that's my thoughts.
Thank you, Alan. Anybody else? In that case, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion, Don Airey.
Thank you, Don. I recognize your voice.
Tara will second it.
And Alicia seconds it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Richard Leap.
You guys have great.